I used to have a printer when I pastored church. that would just fit down Oakland's new preacher, got a new copier, which does a great job, but doesn't have a finisher. So I talked to a preacher that's very close to us, and I said, you have a colored printer that'll fit out a multiple-sized booklet? Ready to go? Yep. So I went in yesterday morning. He was going to be at camp. I said, make sure you have your secretary. She looked at it and said, well, I'll tell you right now, it doesn't fall in the dust thing. We kind of figured, oh, man. So the colored printer and the finisher that we had to engage with another church, they called that preacher at about 9:30 in the morning. So I would like to use the printer to print out the booklets for this retreat tomorrow. He called me about 3:30 in the afternoon. Oh, yeah. And he said, sure. He knew I'd already gone to our church and printed out the booklets. I was having a seat where at home that worked well. Only the copy I had was taken on our Sabbath seat. I had to push a seat, hold it up, push it forward with my finger, close it, staple it, get ready for the second staple, open it back up, push the staple down. It's like, I tell my wife, I'll be up. Put books together. It really was nice going to Brothers Slurs and just tell how many books I wanted. And it just come out of the printer that way. Along with coming to Emmanuel for the panel again, I was actually saying in the ministry of the Emmanuel Baptist Church in Pontiac. And this fits into what I want to say about the three chairs. When we're there, the church are in around 1,200. And it's speaking out to 1,600. That exists today. The church is out of existence. We moved when I was in 8th grade to Tulsa, where I met your pastor. The church, when we moved there, ran 700. You know what they ran when you were the youth pastor? Was around 7. I think they got up to 12. They run about 250 today. So we look around and see a lot of friends and family. But do you understand that Emmanuel Baptist Church of Kingsman is just one generation away from conversion? 2 years ago, Pastor Jim Opal came to me and said, I don't care what the preacher says next year, if he invites you back, you're not going to. So last year at the end of a retreat, he invited me back. And in front of all the people that were there, I accepted. Then I beelined into Jim Edwards that I've not forgot about the conversation we had a year ago. I really want to thank you for what you did for your preacher. What an incredible thing. But as much as you love him, or the names you write in your booklet, your grandchildren, your children and grandchildren, the parable of the three chairs is not perfect. For us, for me, it would be Eddie Abrams. In the middle, J. chair would be a Jennifer Riser to Jamie Rentz. We have three grandkids right now. One of them's in heaven. He died when he was 6 days old. But the two we get to see all the time, Max and Libby, and the one that is supposed to be born Sunday, it's we've been asked a lot. Is it a boy or a girl? Well, they told us it was a boy. The husband calls it a man child. But they're going to name him Abraham, called Babe. His father's middle name is Abraham. And our other daughter is going to try for another one. They will say a boy. They like the name Lincoln. I thought, oh man, go on vacation together. Can you imagine young Abraham Lincoln? Come on! I'll think about what I said a little bit with Emmanuel Baptist Pontiac running 1,200. When I was here, reached a peak of 1,600, and I would be with us today. When Brother Sarah and I talked about the theme for this year, he said, I'm raising God the kids. And you may be thinking, as I am, I don't have any kids at home. But I do have two kids. I do have three grandkids. How many of you have been to the Creation Museum? You have. Ken Ham does a pastor's day, I think twice a year. I went to one a couple years ago, and he gave us a copy of a book entitled Already Gone. It's a book I read along on the retreat last year and read quite a bit of it while I was here. He spoke to us while we ate lunch. And the book was about this. He was promoting the book. He said, most of the kids that you pastor won't come back, won't go to church anywhere after they graduate. And then he said, the kids that are most involved Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday kids are the biggest statistics. Most will never come back. Oh, we talked a little bit afterwards, and I said, you know, I pastor, you got my interest piece. Does the book offer any answers? And he said, it offers a lot of answers. He said, does it say why the kids that are there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, are the biggest and hurt kids at all, never come back? And he said he talks a lot about it, tells why they won't come back, what's happened. And I was hoping what a lot of you are hoping, and that was he'd just tell me. He didn't tell me, and I'm not going to tell you. It's a great book, Already Gone. In the Old Testament, how many of you are believers for 5 years or less? 5 years or less. Besides your pastor. You've been here 20 years. You've been saying 5 years. That's right. I started preaching with the lady a few minutes ago. Your pastor looked at me and said, you were sick. I was just glad he heard me. Raise your hand again if you've been saved. Five, keep your hand up. 5 years or less. There is a major difference from the Old Testament to the New Testament in that the Old Testament allows us to see generation after generation. You don't see that in the New Testament. You get a lot of principles in the New Testament, but in the Old Testament, you can follow families. Not all families, but some of them. Remember, God gave us the Bible to help us. So, think if you would about the family making up Abraham, conviction. He was known other than Abraham. What was he known about? The Prince of God. Isaac. We know the same. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And always think of them as spiritual giants. But if you read what the Bible tells us about Isaac, he was no spiritual giant, a good businessman. But he was no spiritual giant. He had a father that had great conviction, but he was full of compromises. I think it's Genesis 27, we read the story about Isaac's children, Jacob and Esau. They were grown men now, and Jacob wanted what was not right for his. He wanted the birthright. So he deceived his dad. Here's a great story that my wife told me to keep it short. We got up at 3 this morning, so I'll keep it short. I did shave at 3 this morning. She looked over and said, "You forget to shave." No, it's just been a long time. And then she said, "What every man likes to hear, you'll grow a scuzzy." Are there other sweet nothings you want to whisper? For those of you who know Jacob's name, means what? The planner. Jacob was a con man. He wasn't a Sunday school teacher. He was a con man. He was probably a lost man. But he fit into God's plan. So God literally, physically, wrestled with him to make him believe. Years later, Jacob would need his newfound faith. But I want you to get the picture. Conviction, compromise, confused. Saved, lost. We talked about Abraham being a friend of God. There is another man in the Old Testament with a nickname. His name was King David, and he is known as what? Was he known as a friend of God? No, that wasn't Abraham. You may say, I didn't hear it. A man after God's own heart. His son was. And he had a lot of sons. But we'll talk about the lineage of Christ, Solomon. He passed kingdom on to his son, Rehoboam. David was a man of incredible conviction. He fought a bear, him and God. He fought a lion, him and God. He fought a giant, him and God. Solomon, we know him as the wisest man who ever lived. But if you read his story, he did well until David died. He took over the kingdom. He asked God for wisdom. And God just lavished him with wisdom and everything else. But then he wrote a book in the Bible. And he talked about all the things that tried to make him happy. When he left the will of God. No doubt in my mind, David was saved. No doubt in my mind, Solomon was saved. But Rehoboam probably lost. Now, don't miss what I'm about to say. It's almost impossible. It's not impossible. But almost impossible to find the same man in the Old Testament whose grandchildren were saved. You know, I talk about me and my daughter, and my grandchildren, but my dad was saved. My mom was saved. Well, really, I would fit the middle chair. But it was important for me to move to the first chair. See, I couldn't rest in the second chair. I could not compromise. It was important to me. But the day would come when I would have grown. I didn't want them to grow up confused. Let me change it. I didn't want them to grow up and be lost. I had to make sure I was over here so that they compromise at least to be saved. But now with me here, and my girls here, my grandkids here, you know, I keep hearing people say, grandkids are better than kids. I don't know that I understand that more. I get a lot of joy out of our grandkids. And the one in Southern California, they put me in the poorhouse. Because when Grammy doesn't ever fix with the grandkids that are 100 miles away, in 3 weeks, it's time to go see the grandkids. I'm thinking, God, you've got to do something about this grandchild that's about to be born in Southern California. But for my daughters, when they think of their kids, it was important to me to make sure they could go from here. So their kids, even the big one gets used, would be saved. I don't have any great-grandkids, but I'm going to give you great-grandkids. Nobody. Of Patty's mom and dad, by the year in 29, great-grandkids. It's the last one we all get together. We used to meet in a house. Now we meet in a church. We're thinking about someday running a convention center. By the way, with 49 great-grandchildren, they're just getting started. They'll probably have in their lifetime 39, 40 great-grandchildren. That's one of the wrong directions. Turning your Bible with me to the book of Joshua. There is a phrase in the book of Joshua that we use all the time. In fact, one year for Father's Day, we gave out little plaques with this engraved on them. You know, I, through the years of pastoring, have been a chance to do a lot of counseling. Many times I've had a dad look at me and say, you cannot make your kid serve God. I said, that's too bad, because Joshua said you couldn't. Look with me in Joshua chapter 24. In verse 15, and if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your, that your father, which your fathers served, that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the environment in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You know, I can't tell you how many times through the years I got refreshment from that. And you'd have to understand, being a preacher, how many different companies sell you samples or send you samples before Mother's Day and Father's Day of things you could give away. I remember the year I opened up that little thing that said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. My job's work. Before I ever looked at the price, I prayed, God, let this be cheap enough for me to give away. And it was. But turn the page if you have hope to learn, or look in verse 31. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders and elders of Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel. Turn a couple pages with me into the book of Judges, chapter 2. You read almost word for word what we just read out of Joshua. The Israelites served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and the elders that outlived Joshua. Look at verse 7, and the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. Skip down to verse 10. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. Don't miss the following words. And there arose another generation, or a third generation, after them which knew, what's the next word? Not. Which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works what she had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. Answer to Jacob. Joshua and his children and his great-grandchildren, another generation. But to the second chapter, look at Joshua 5. This generation served the Lord all the days of Joshua. And the elders that outlived Joshua. But then what happened? They served the Lord all the days of Joshua. Take a moment, look around the room. You're sitting here, may serve the Lord. You may not see the problem. But here's what the Bible tells is the inherent danger of having kids. They'll serve the Lord all your days. They'll serve the Lord all your days. But in Christianity, we don't want that. We want to raise kids who will serve the Lord all their days. All that part gone. I want Jamie and Jennifer to serve the Lord. I don't want them to make their compromises. I don't want their kids to be confused. I don't want them to care. I want them to hear. And they have to raise their children to someday. The hope of Christianity is that we keep moving the young people here. But that's not happening. Whether it's Emmanuel Baptist Church in King's Mountain or Emmanuel Baptist Church in another city, the norm is that every church has to reach a new generation because they lose their own kids. You know, the Emmanuel Baptist Church of King's Mountain is not the exception to the rule. It's a good church. It has good standards, has good music, has good doctrine. But the Emmanuel Baptist Church has not been the only church through the years with good doctrine, good music, good music. You understand? Emmanuel Baptist Divine had good music, good doctrine, good people. But they're out of recruits to death. The church we joined in Tulsa, Paul Baptist, you could write it all down, it's fine. But it's just a little bit of what I once was. The same is going to be true of the Emmanuel Baptist in King's Mountain generation ago. This generation. You celebrate brothers, friends, 20th anniversary. If the Lord dares this cup, 20 years from now, you don't want to pass this corner and say, look here, that's where I used to go to church. What happens here? I have a good friend that pastored a church in Fort Wayne. He was going to tell us and start someplace else. And then they found that there were gas tanks that they used for their bus ministry that were very convenient, who cost them millions to clean it up. So the city took over the property and put it all back. I can send Chuck, the guy whose church won the dogs. What will happen here is largely up to you. You know, we're so strong. The thing is, it can't happen to us. It can't happen here. God didn't write this book and give it to us so we could sit back and think with the exception. I'm sure Joshua looked around and in his day thought, Israel had turned the line under him. But when he was gone, and the elders that outlived him, Israel forgot about God. God got that confidence. Our theme this year is faith again. Great in God again. You know, when you start telling greater seed that it did not, the need that took the world. When Pat and I didn't have any kids, we were fixed about having kids. My dad said, for the moment, are you sure you want to bring a child into this corrupt world? He made me think a little bit. So we had another conversation on the phone. And I said, sure, I do. It's possible to break God's gift. I'm really technical. But you don't have to do a perfect job breaking the gift. Because we did not. My mom now lives with us. Said, I wish I could have heard some of your teaching when you get through those. I said, you know, God's word has always been there. But the truth is, we need it worse today than when my parents were younger and I was a little kid. But I want to reemphasize that the church that I was saved in that reached its peak in my lifetime, a 1600, it's gone. Just completely gone. Don't think it can appear. While God doesn't need perfect parents, and He doesn't need parents to do a perfect job, He needs parents that will look to Scripture and find the answers. And I want to have fun this weekend. But let's start by telling the truth. We're not doing it. We're just enjoying them. We want them to like us. Give real good memory. When we talk about the friends your kids have, the Bible says a lot about that. The third point on there is a popular decision. We moved from the north side of Indy to Linden when my oldest was a student. Can't tell you how hard it is. And probably the best looking boy in his school took an interest in. So I called his pastor I was not his pastor. And I said, you know, I think this guy likes my daughter. If we're talking about your daughter, would he be allowed to date her? And he said, no. Know what? He put his own mom in the hospital when he beat her up. You know, when the guy came by, I made what was with my daughter a real unpopular decision. I asked him to leave and not come back. And my oldest started crying and said, that's why. Well, I wasn't going to name the other preacher I tried. So I didn't tell myself why. I just said, you're not going to date that boy. You are not going to date him. Here I moved her as a senior. And then told the best looking boy in the school, don't come back to my house. Told my daughter, you will not date him. But faith is biblical principle. Years earlier, she was probably in ninth grade. She made a vow in our devotion that she would not date an angry person. It's one of the very few times we ask our girls to make two decisions. She made a decision that she wouldn't be friends with an angry person. Her best friend at school, the Christian school, got mad at her because she wouldn't pay too much attention to somebody else. She came home and he told me about it. I got the notebook off the shelf where she had made that commitment to God. And I said, you're not going to be the first. I love when the girls cry. Oh! And I said, it's a promise you made to God. Woo! I came to your friend and I said, you know, if you're going to stay your friend, you're going to have to help her overcome the problem. So the next day she came home from school all happy and said, not a problem, I asked her. And she said, she wasn't an angry person. I said, you're the one who told me yesterday. She got mad at you for paying too much attention to this other person. Her best friend, her mom taught us in school. I said, you don't have to be with her mom because she's raised with an angry daughter. I believe God could do that to ninth grade. But she had to learn to obey God. So I didn't go with her. Her mom didn't go with her. As a ninth grader, she had to go to the school teacher and talk to her about raising her daughter as an angry person. But in Proverbs 22, the day that she made that commitment, it talked about learning from a friend their angry ways. She promised God she wouldn't be a friend to an angry person. So there are answers in the Bible. And we're going to talk about a lot of those at family camp this year. But a lot of you are not going. You just remember to get your test. Start looking for someone who has great conviction. Great gift, or you can say. It's not that you can't write them, but it's really, really hard. You can find it with Abraham or Jacob. But understand, God came down from heaven and wrestled with him physically. He's not going to do that with your child. He is not going to do that with your child. Do we need this help? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. About 3 years ago, I talked about the honor of God. And I just want to bring up one point. We're going to put down a whole number of God that maybe evil will see. Some of you, not one, have talked to your kids about the honor of God. If someone offered them $1 million to name the whole armor of God, I couldn't do it. But God said they have to put it on every day to be able to see. Not that they will see, but that the inference from their passage is that if they don't wear it, they're not going to be able to see. Let's start heading forward first. Whatever it is.